What's up, everyone? Welcome back to my Cultivating Change series. I'm turning this into a podcast, and per your requests, I am going to branch out and start getting different people's journeys, what they learned along the way. Our first guest is going to be a man named Deepak Saini. Deepak is a classmate of mine through Primal Health Coach Institute. The Institute provides a broad framework from which aspiring health coaches can work. Tons of research articles, coaching tidbits. I am an ambassador for them because the program was so well designed and allowed me to aggregate and really turn all of the knowledge and useful experimental data that we all do on ourselves into the most impactful form of programs to help other people and empower other people towards their journey. If anyone is interested in Primal Health Coach Institute, I will have links at the bottom of this podcast. Deepak and I share this passion with trying to impact people through a holistic approach. You guys know from watching my channel, so that is sleep, that's lifestyle, that's sunshine, that's nutrition, that's movement, that's stress management, everything. Any one piece of that is great by itself and can hold the key to your success, but there are too many factors in everyday life. And to really have a lasting impact on yourself, you need to dip into more than one. And that's where the habit and the lifestyle change that I always talk about comes in. If you can control your nutrition, if you can control your movement, if you can control your stress management, if you can dig into the nitty-gritty to actually bulletproof your everyday by integrating small bits of those, that's when you truly unleash your genetic potential and doors start opening for you. It's like we talk about during the podcast, you don't notice any changes because you're getting 1% better every day until you start hitting a little bit of a threshold, and then there's an exponential curve where you see your growth accelerate. So it's a lot of daily work without much instant gratification. You'll definitely feel good from the movement and the increased nutrition from all of that. And then somewhere in your journey, you'll start to explode, and the bar you had set for yourself will disappear. And you'll start wondering how far you can push it. Enjoy this podcast, Deepak Saini. Welcome back to Cultivating Change, everyone. I'm your host, Alex Corey, and it's my mission to bring the most practical, easy steps you can integrate in your day-to-day life to fully express your given genetic birthright and optimize for performance, whatever that means to you. We are down at my second microgreen farm today, and we have as a guest, per everyone's request, to start doing more interviews and digging into everyone's story and what they found on their path to success. We have a performance coach and a classmate in my Primal Health Coach program, Deepak Saini. Deepak, if you just want to give a little bit of introduction, as we were chatting about before we started, I found your interview on Primal Health Coach Radio with Aaron Power and Laura Rupsis, and you have a broad history. You've lived in two worlds, kind of like me. My background's in tech and infrastructure, and it sounds like your background's in accounting and the corporate world, so two worlds combine, and just give a little brief history as to how you ended up in health for yourself and empowering other people to their journey from accounting.
Sure. First of all, Alex, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. I'll be really brief here. Sure. I don't want to bore people with my backstory, and I've talked about it a number of times before. But long story short, I always had a lot of health challenges growing up. I was always the chubby kid, so I always struggled with weight. My entire life, as far back as I can remember, autoimmune condition, I get sick all the time, allergies, you name it, all the way through. So yes, as you're right, I went to school to be an accountant, professional accountant. I still hold my designation. It took a lot to get it, so I maintain it. I just do the bare minimum, but I don't practice that anymore, obviously. But so struggled with things up and down, weight loss. At my heaviest, I was about 275, so well over 100 pounds heavier than I am right now. And here and there, and kind of, that 20-30 swing, continuously that a lot of people can relate with, I'm sure. I got a number of years ago, maybe 10-12 years ago, I got into running as a way to think oh, maybe that's how I lose the last X pounds type of thing. And I'm actually, I wasn't a bad and weight did come off, but I, you know, kind of became, you know, people are familiar with the term skinny fat, right? So my arms and my legs got pretty lean, but still had the spare tire around my midsection. Mm-hmm. But all that pounding, all that chronic cardio, people also probably heard that term, really broke me down. Not only was I still getting sick all the time and whatnot. And I had started working with a naturopathic doctor to try and work on the autoimmune stuff. And we were moving in the right direction. But long story short, one day I just, all that pounding leading into a marathon, half marathon, excuse me. I just bent over to pick up like nothing and just felt a little something in my back. And that was the start of the down spiral. And of course, being stubborn and, you know, having to prepare for a race that was upcoming, I just took a bit of rest, didn't properly rest, hit it the next weekend, do that for a couple of weeks, and pretty soon you can't move. So I basically had no flexion in my back, so I couldn't bend over, so I couldn't tie my shoes, couldn't put on the socks.
Oh, wow.
It was very hard getting in and out of a chair, that includes the toilet. But the real sort of down, the real rock bottom, if you will, was my youngest daughter was just a baby at the time. I couldn't even pick up a 10-pound baby out of her crib. You know, I could sort of gingerly sit into a chair. My wife could place her in my arms and we could play, but I couldn't even stand up with a baby. I was afraid like I'd drop her or something like that. So I wasn't running anymore. I wasn't golfing, which is another thing I used to like to do. And I couldn't pick up my daughter. So I didn't see it in myself at the time, but you know, looking in now in hindsight, like I totally had depression, you know, couldn't do all those things, constant pain, just doing enough to get to work. Pain all the time, you know, moving, wiggling in your chair, you know, because you're just always uncomfortable, always that low line pain, et cetera. So, you know, went to see the, you know, traditional medical system. They had no answers for me, a lot of misdiagnoses, a lot of shots and injections that were not useful at all. You know, started seeing chiropractor, physiotherapist, et cetera, not really making much acupuncturist, not really making much progress. Finally, I got so fed up with it. I'm like, I'm paying for an MRI. Out of my own pocket. So just, you know, basically the next day went and got one done and properly diagnosed finally with an MRI. I have degenerative disc disease in my L4, L5, L5S1. So low back. So now it's like, okay, now we know what the problem actually is, where the pain's coming from. You know, physiotherapist is like, okay, well, we can't really do anything for that. We can just make the, you know, surrounding muscles stronger, you know, to compensate. The core stronger, but can't do anything much about that. So I'd already slowly dived into the world of performance, even the world of biohacking and that sort of thing. So, you know, I'd heard about PRP. So I looked into that, talked to my naturopathic doctor, and she referred me to another doctor and got that done. And I saw small improvements doing a number of rounds of that.
Platelet-rich plasma.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. And if people don't know, I'll just quickly explain. Sure. Is that they, you know, they do a blood draw of your own blood, put it in a centrifuge, spin it, so it separates all the components. They take the platelets, which are, you know, very
different density,
very energy dense, yeah, I would say, and then they inject back at site. So again, I've seen small market imprint. It's not an inexpensive procedure, especially when you're paying for it out of pocket. So. And they told me low back is tricky. They said this might take 3 or 4, like shoulder, ankle, usually one time you're good. Low back's tricky, it might take 3 or 4. I end up having to do 8 before I felt like I was good. And then I subsequently did 2 sort of, let's call it maintenance shots afterwards. But in between all these, I'm just getting more into the research. I'm digging in, you know, all the literature. So in between shot or at the start of shot 4, like I'm doing the blood draw, talking with the doctor, I was like, hey, does this make sense? You tell me, like, I'm an accountant, you know, I'm new to this, you know, kind of medical research, let's call it. Am I understanding this correctly that if you bring inflammation down, you know, it should help everywhere, right? But if you, you know, and we're injecting the PRP at site, but if I have inflammation somewhere else, potentially it's getting diverted, right? And if there's low inflammation, it would work better, the procedure. Am I understanding the science right? Like, do I get this? And he's like, oh yeah, absolutely. You totally understand that. So he must've read the expression on my face, because I was about to like yell at him, like, why the heck didn't you tell me this before we went into procedure one to bring inflammation down. So he apologized saying, you know, quite honestly, most people, you know, won't change their diet, won't change their lifestyle. And kind of just stop telling people because they want the magic pill. They want the magic bullet. I said, listen, you don't understand. I'm not golfing. I'm not running. I can't pick up my daughter. I'll do whatever. So I dropped cold turkey that day. It was too late for that procedure. Like I was right at the office, but I just cold turkey, started eating clean, and we can talk what that means, but you know, it's evolved over time for sure.
I'm sure.
So I did that for 2 weeks post-procedure. It's like, yeah, maybe I felt a little better. It's kind of hard to tell. Like, is it just because now it's the fourth shot and I'm getting incrementally better? Is it the inflammation? I don't know. 2 weeks go by, kind of fall into old habits. Okay, I still want to do another shot, book it. Then it's like, oh, geez, 2 weeks until my next procedure. Oh, maybe I should start eating clean leading up to it. So I 2 weeks clean up to the procedure, 2 weeks after. Oh, okay. I think it worked better. A little bit more range of motion. So basically bending over was my sort of my gauge of how my back is feeling. And then it kind of dawned on me, like, why are you doing the cycle of like eating clean and going back to garbage, eating clean? So I was like, I'm just going to eat clean for, you know, now go forward type of thing. And so eventually, like I said, my back felt better. I felt like it stopped the treatments. Definitely inflammation down, but here's the kicker. So I, for someone who struggled with the weight their whole life, I had a scale, but I wasn't really one to like jump on the scale and check every day or even weekly or, you know, kind of periodically type of thing. As life goes, sometimes when you've got young kids, the corporate world, et cetera, kind of get behind on the laundry, grab a pair of pants from the back of the closet you haven't worn in a while, put them on. And I was like, gosh, what the heck? So I call my wife. I'm like, I think I might've lost some weight. Like these pants are like really big. And she's like, what are you, an idiot? Of course you've lost weight. Like you can totally see it in your face. I didn't even really realize it. So I'm like, oh geez, get out the scale, blow the dust off, get on it. It's like, yeah, in a short amount of time, I lost the last, you know, 50, 60 pounds that I was holding on to. People have started noticing at work, making comments. You know, my clothes almost now, they don't fit. They're too baggy. You know, you got clothes that are too big. You got to cinch the belt up a bit tighter. I'd run into people I hadn't seen in a while. I'm like, hey, how's it going? They wouldn't recognize me. You know, I keep my hair pretty short, but you know, once they kind of realized who I was, like, oh, how's it going? Good. Yeah. Where are you working now? Et cetera. How are the kids? Blah, blah, blah. And then they lean in, you know, maybe touch me and they're like, are you okay? Like so many people thought I had cancer because I lost weight. So, and I, you know, keep my hair nice and short. Right. I was like, no, you don't understand. I'm like feeling the best I ever have, you know, type of thing. So that was just my change to my sort of the lightning bolt, if you will. And then after having so many people, can I take you for a coffee? Can I buy you a lunch? Like, what'd you do? And I was like, oh, read this article. And pretty soon I realized like, I like this a lot more, helping people than I do working as an accountant. So, yeah, I stewed on that for a while, but, you know, long story short, I eventually, you know, started as a side hustle, you know, as a doing that on a, you know, got some, you know, coursework, courses done, et cetera, evenings and weekends, lunch hours, et cetera. And then a number of years ago, I went full-time coaching.
That there's a lot there. The low back pain is near and dear because every 3 months or so, my other life is a personal trainer. And it's probably the one thing that almost everyone has some form of low back pain, probably not degenerative disc disease, but tweak your low back so easily. And it always seems to happen when you're not prepared. So it usually doesn't happen at the gym because you warm up and you prepare and you brace and you do your form. It's usually moving when you're not adequately preparing for it. So like helping people move furniture or doing yard work. Do you have any practices around prevention or maintenance of like core strength to help your low back, just not on the disease front, but just so you maintain good lower back health, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I'll answer that kind of two ways. So, mm-hmm. So first, from a sort of physical point of view, when I was going through that rehab, before we sort of figured out what was really going on with me, you know, worked with two physiotherapists, chiropractor. So I have a whole routine that we developed, and I worked with it too. You steal a little bit from, you know, other people. You hear a Paul Check or somebody like that, and you're like, well, what about this? Oh yeah, and we modify some exercises. So I have a whole routine that if I, you know, take my time, go through it, and it's basically a core strengthening routine. So I don't do abs. I do this stretching. I call it my stretching routine because it takes the whole core into account. And for me, core is like knees to shoulders.
Correct.
That's what I consider core, right? Not just abs. So it takes me a good 45 minutes every day. Now, if I'm in a rush or I'm feeling good or whatever circumstance, I can sort of, you know, whittle it down to 20 minutes and just kind of rush through it quickly or not do as many cycles of a certain exercise. But otherwise, it's 45 minutes. And I do that daily. That is imperative for me to be able to function how I want to function, to be as present as I can be for my own goals, for my family, for my kids, and for my clients as well. So that's imperative to me. So that's number one from the physical point of view. Number two is just try and identify all the areas of inflammation or kryptonite for myself and just try and eliminate those as best as possible. And sometimes you're going to indulge whatever those might be, but when you do indulge it with intention, knowing, okay, I might not feel so good tomorrow, but I'm choosing to do this. I'm choosing to have alcohol. I'm choosing to have the pizza for my daughter's birthday party because that's what she wanted to have, et cetera. And I take the same approach working with my clients as well. So
I think that's a healthy.
Yeah.
I think I watched Mark Sisson, who's the kind of the godfather of the school of thought that we're trained under. He had a good podcast with Sean, Model Health Show, Sean Stevenson. And it was basically what you just said is you're going to do it. You're going to indulge because that's part of life and you want to get full enjoyment. But as long as you put the intention into it and are fully present, like if you're just enjoying some birthday cake, first bite's going to be amazing because it's novelty. Second bite's going to be slightly less amazing. Third bite probably will have worn off and then decide if you still want to eat the whole thing because it's that enjoyment and pleasure. If you're going to do it, fully immerse into the experience and enjoy it. But once it no longer holds that sway, right, what's the point? And, you know, enjoy every bite of it and then realize what it's going to do and see if it's worth it.
Yeah. Alex, can I share one thing? Complete that thought is, so yes, I totally agree. Like with intention, I don't really buy into everything in moderation. And maybe that's a topic we can get into
either.
Later.
Yeah.
I think that's a bunch of BS, but yes, with intention. But that being said, that doesn't mean you can't do practices or hacks to prepare your body to take that as well. I.e. okay, I know I'm going here. This is what's they're going to serve. Okay. I'm going to fast all day, you know, and that'll be my one meal, or I'm going to take some sort of supplement to control, blood sugar, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, again, it's not that it's all about like hacking things or whatever, but certainly you can have intention, but let's use some science and some technology at the same time as well.
Oh yeah. I'm with you. A lot of my daily posts, because that's usually the hits the most people. And that's what a lot of people kind of want. They're just like, I'm going to do this because I want to enjoy life. So how do I mitigate the damage? And exactly like you said, it's rev up your metabolism beforehand. So whenever it hits you, you use it immediately. So give yourself a little bit of a buffer, or apple cider vinegar works well to just like get the sugar into your cells immediately. So it's not just circulating. There's a couple of walking right after. We're just doing a light routine right after to sort of use that burst of energy. You're still going to get a little of the inflammation, but it won't linger for hours, probably like it would have, or even a weekend for some people. I'm hypersensitive just because I've been doing clean eating, like you said, for a bit. So if I have a night of debauchery, so just like a regular pizza or maybe like two slices of cake, it will hurt for, I won't be able to perform at the level I want to for probably 2 days, which is obnoxious at this point and seems like people should recover faster than that. But if you're just aware of your baseline and what you can do, you just notice it more. So probably most people would be like, I just didn't feel good for 2 days. But at some point, if you're used to sort of just a stable energy level, yeah, it just hurts and it becomes not worth it. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
What supplements do you like?
Yeah. Can I just, so one thing, sure. I'll answer your question there, Alex. One thing. So what I find too is that, you know, it's about, I don't know how to put this, you know, yeah, just know, yeah, like you said, knowing your balance, knowing your baseline, type of thing. I found over time I've gotten more sensitive as the longer I've been cleaning. So, you know, even just yesterday we had some work done at the house and some sort of the chemical cabinet, let's call it. We had to take some stuff out to fix something back there and then put it back. And not like anything got opened, but obviously there's always a little residue. Just that little bit of chemical smell, I just felt like so off. I'm just like, that wouldn't have bothered me 10, 12 years ago. I am so sensitive now. And my wife sometimes makes fun of me, like, oh, you're such a snowflake. Now I was like, okay, like I'm optimized. The more optimized you get, the more sensitive I think you become. If I could share one story, Alex. I don't want to make this look
like
this.
Oh, no, podcast too long. I love stories.
So a number of years ago, my wife's family, they've been on the same farming, the same homestead for over 100 years.
Wow.
So the local municipality, you know, gave them this award for over 100 years farming the same piece of land in the same family, whatever. So they took that as an opportunity to have like a big, big party, you know, type of thing. So all the family got, you know, invited, you know, who've now all spread around all over the place, right? We live in, you know, in the city and everything. So, you know, we had to go down like 3-hour drive and all the neighbors and everything. So anyway, it was a great big afternoon barbecue in the summer, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going there. We're, you know, I'm very careful with what I'm having as far as, you know, alcohol, you know, again, it's a party. So with intention, you know, only eating certain things, avoiding other things. But then, you know, you got all these like desserts that all the grandmas and the great aunts and everything made, right? So I'm taking like the thinnest little slice, oh, like fresh strawberry rhubarb pie. So I'm gonna have a try, oh, fresh peach pie. So I got like, you know, the thinnest little slice I can cut, but of like 3 or 4 different pieces of pie. My wife's cousin's husband, he's like, I didn't think that was part of your diet plan. I was like, hey, look, man, like it isn't. This isn't a special occasion, but I guarantee you tomorrow, my left knee is going to be so stiff, I'm going to be hard to move, right? So we enjoy our night, we go stay at the hotel, and then that next morning we have breakfast with a smaller subset of the family. Same person who asked me that question there, he's like, so how's your knee? I'm like, and it was actually this had never happened to before that point. I woke up that morning and my hands were so stiff, like I couldn't even, I'm like, that's not usually my usual MO, it's usually my knees. So I was like, oh geez, what the heck? So right away, throw on the gym clothes, go to the gym, sweat it out, get on the elliptical, you know, whatever, do a couple laps in the pool, hot shower, boom, good to go. And so then he asked me, I was like, actually, it was my hands. So yeah, like you know, everyone knows what their thing is. They might not recognize it at first, but everyone knows what their thing is. So
yeah, inflammation shows up in weird ways. A lot of time it'll be stiffness. And I know a lot of people well enough where sometimes I think people attribute seasonal pressure changes to inflammation from diet. They're just like, oh, this hurts, but it's probably barometric pressure changes. And I was like, you have that happen a lot. It might be something else.
But I mean, skincare. I see a lot. Skincare, people like breaking. I'm like, that's inflammation. Like you're of a certain age, you're not going through puberty anymore. I'm sorry. Like, you know, I mean, there's a hormonal thing, of course, sure. Right? You know, especially for women, that like can't discount that. But when it's, you know, more frequent than it should be, like that's inflammation. So
your face is a good barometer, just because your skin cells and your the blood vessels are so close, so you can see changes in dilation, and the skin cells in your face turn over the quickest. So it's kind of a reflection. I treat it as a reflection of your internal world, kind of.
Absolutely.
So if you see people with like obscene rosacea, or I mean, some people just have that, but if it's consistent and doesn't really go away, and you're just like, you always seem a little inflamed, and they're like, well, I have a headache a lot too. So there's a lot of factors that I think people just deal with, unfortunately, and they're just like, yeah, that's just how the cookie crumbles. But
yeah,
okay, so much there to unpack.
Yeah, so you asked me about supplements. You want me to come back to that?
Yeah, what do you use as a preventative if you're going to go enjoy yourself for a little bit? What's your sort of prevention?
Yeah, so I'll definitely fast, as I mentioned earlier. Yes. And then I will have apple cider vinegar for sure, bitter melon extract. What's the other one I take? It's escaped me at the moment. It'll come to me later. So that's certainly those for sure. Yeah, try and get some movement afterwards, cold if possible. I live in Canada, so it's not hard to get cold.
Yeah.
After a meal or just even just move. You know, quite often for even with family, like, okay, instead of chatting with all the adults, I'll go play with the kids afterwards, you know, just to get some movement going. You know, maybe it's not a walk, because sometimes it's not appropriate to just leave and go for a walk. type of thing. And then, you know, depending, you know, if I'm, you know, at a restaurant, you know, it's like, you're going to get bad oils. You're maybe going to have a couple of drinks. So it's like, okay, I'll, you know, have some activated charcoal. You know,
I was going to say charcoal.
And stuff like that. So.
Perfect. Okay.
I'll take some chlorella and, you know, things like some, a lot of binders, things like that.
So. I haven't heard that one in a bit. Yeah. It used to be all about, broken cell wall, chlorella and spirulina when I went, vegetarian. That was my early 20s. And then I was just combining everything. When you do that, you have no idea what's working. So if you don't have charcoal, if it's chlorella, or if it's cilantro, any chelators, but it's all good. So right, it's all binding heavy metals and hopefully grabbing some of the oxidative damage. What are your, because I'm going to forget about this and I want to know exactly what you mean, what are your no-goes? So you said I'm not a huge fan of moderation, and neither am I. There's a couple of things I just say nope, get rid of it. What are yours?
Industrial seed oils. That's number one. We don't have that in the house. We cook mostly with coconut oil. Yep. We've done ghee. I mean, I'm East Indian background, half East Indian. So I personally don't even like the taste of ghee, honestly. So we've tried it.
It's kind of weird.
So it's mostly coconut oil, a high quality, like we go to the specialty store to get the high quality olive oil, but that's a dressing or a dipping sauce or something like that. Yeah, so probably industrial seed oils is definitely the no-go. It's not in our household. I'm the type of guy who, and this is just me, I mean, I don't make my kids or my wife do it or anything, it's just me, but like I will take my own balsamic and olive oil to like restaurants or to other people's houses.
That's a good idea.
Or whatever, you know, and people, you know, that we regularly frequent, they just know, don't put dressing on it. Deepak, can you take your salad out? And then they'll make whatever their dish they're making or.
That's a good idea.
Whatever. So I do that. I'll bring salt with me, pepper, you know, good quality, you know, type of things. Yeah, those probably, I mean, there's a place for sugar, you know, depending what you're doing, there's a place for sugar alternatives. So we use a lot of other things. We don't eat a ton of sweets. You know, sometimes you just use a banana, a ripe banana or applesauce or something for sweetening. We don't do a lot of that kind of stuff in our household anyway. I can't control when we go to other places, but you know, it's, I'm just making something up here. It's my nephew's birthday party. It's like, that looks like a really good, like dark chocolate cake. Like I'll have a piece, but I'll do those mitigation techniques we talked about earlier. Right.
Gotcha. Grains is one of the ones I try to get rid of, but that's a culturally sensitive thing for a lot of people. Like lentils and beans in some cultures are like a staple, so it's real hard to mitigate those. Is the Indian culture one of those?
Yeah, so thank you for bringing that on. I can't believe I forgot grains.
That's fine.
Yeah, so no, in the Indian culture for sure. So my dad's side of the family, yes, lentils, chickpeas, kidney beans even, etc. So I ate a lot of that growing up. Maybe that caused part of it. To a degree, my parents still make that a little bit. My wife, you know, she likes having a chili or something with some kidney beans and whatever in there. I try and pick them out, or she'll make the meat part and I'll take mine out and then she'll mix it up. I just, over time, I'm just, again, back to that, I'm really sensitive now. I don't do good with legumes at all. I don't eat grains at all unless it's one of those occasions that I mentioned where it's like, okay, my daughter wants to have pizza. Okay, when I was fat and sick, pizza was my favorite food. It's still my favorite food. It's like the most yummiest thing to me, but I gotta just watch it, right? So again, with intention, whatever. So, but I don't eat bread. I don't eat rice. You know, again, it depends. Like a lot of times on a weekend, we tend to do grocery shopping on the weekend. My daughter loves sushi, my older daughter. So my wife will bring some sushi home. That'll be her lunch. And she's like, oh, Dad, you want like a roll or like a something? And I was like, okay, I've just finished working out. You know, muscle glycogen's depleted. You know, I'm going to still have my eggs and avocado and maybe bacon or something. And then to finish it off, okay, I'll have a little bit of rice with that piece of sushi. Like, I'm not worried about that. But I don't eat bread. I don't eat buns, you know, and with the exception, probably the only grains I really ever eat is, again, pizza crust, you know, every couple weeks or something.
Yeah, that's mirrors what I do. And I found this is super strange. And like you said, your wife calls you a snowflake. I am the delicate houseplant to my friends because I need a very, very precise food, water, like everything about it. It's kind of obnoxious. And a lot of people notice that about health coaches in general is they're like, you guys are very restrictive. And you're like, it's not restrictive. It's I know what won't make me feel good. So I just avoid those things. But and the chili rang so true because chili is probably one of my favorite childhood foods, or was. My mom made the best chili, and I can't do kidney beans anymore. I can get away with pinto and black beans. Those are okay. They'll create a little discomfort, but kidney beans will be like, I'll be in pain, like gastrointestinal pain. And it's so strange, even within families of grains or plants, just minor variations make such a drastic difference for some people. Like chickpeas are absolutely fine. And I think Mark's Daily Apple did a little expose on that. They're like, hummus is fine if you get it without canola oil, because they have such a small amount of lectin in them, and most people tolerate them. And hummus is just such a good, quick, easy food that they let that one in. Especially if you make it yourself and you can do good
Yeah, you know,
quality olive oil.
I went through a stint there where I made my own
Yeah.
hummus, you know, and again, you'd like, it's like, well, I don't want to just make this much. I want to make a big batch worth. And then you couldn't even eat it fast enough before go back because there's no preservatives in it.
Exactly.
But I actually found that even my own hummus, you know, I just buying for convenience sake, like store bought, you know, as much you try and drain and everything, I wasn't like sprouting them myself or anything. I still found that caused me issues. So I was like, yeah, they just need to go. So I'm just not doing. My wife sometimes, again, bless her heart, who tries to make a lot of modifications for us. So she's tried like black bean chocolate brownies type of thing, but they still bother me. So I'm like, okay, as long as the kids are eating them, it's a healthier choice for them. Great, but you know, I appreciate the effort, honey. I'm gonna have a small piece, but I'm not gonna eat anymore because like it just still affects me, right? So.
Do you find that your nutrition pattern has gotten overly simplified over the years, where you just don't really care about as much variation, and probably your palate adapted too? Did you notice any like dramatic changes in taste of food as you're going through your
Yeah, so
progression?
I think maybe this is an age thing, or is there some other, you know, biological impact I'm not really clicking in on? But like, I certainly can't handle as spicy food as I did when I was younger. But yeah, no, there isn't a lot of variation. I basically have essentially, again, I intermittent fast, so you know, I haven't even eaten yet today. So I have like two meals a day, sometimes one, but it's
16-8,
usually.
what's your definition of
Yeah,
IF?
I mean, it depends on the day, but yeah, let's
Okay.
call it 16-8. Sometimes it's like 18. You know, if I know like I got a busy day, and if I don't eat now, I'm not gonna eat for 6 hours, and then that'll be terrible. Like I'll be hangry later or whatever, right? So it varies, but it's roughly 16-8. But I basically have the same breakfast every day, regardless of where I am. Like I could be on vacation, and I can still sort of figure it out most part. Dinner is a little bit more variable, but again, it's a ton of vegetables, whether that's salad and or broccoli or something, and some meat. You know, some, you know, it doesn't change a lot. You know, so one day it's steak, one day it's chicken, one day it's pork, back to steak, hamburgers, whatever. You know, it doesn't change a lot. So there's, to your point, very little variation. Yeah, and I'm fine with that because you can always change up the sauce, you can change up spicing, and it's a different meal,
Exactly.
right?
Yeah. And I find most of my clients actually, well, they're men for one, they like that because most people have better things to do, and they're doing or they're thinking about and trying to get the sort of bulletproof nutrition under the belt so that they don't have to think about it. Be like, figure out the foods that will fuel me for the day that are anti-inflammatory or at least not causing inflammation, that will keep me satiated. And then forget about it. Like get maybe two or three different options you can interchange if you want a little variation, like you said, different sauces, different spices, and then just move on. Like there's more to life in my view than food. So I try to just simplify everything as much as possible, just so I have
Absolutely.
enough energy and then just get on with it. And that's my approach. Some people take it to the other end where they're going for different like neurological properties. If they're doing a lot of nootropics or doing cognitive performance, they'll get very nitpicky about food. And I like all of that, but if it interferes with all my other projects and things I'm interested in, it's kind of a turn off for me. So I just try to simplify everything as much as possible. I don't know if you're similar.
Yeah, no, for definitely in our household for sure. And then even when I work with my clients, quite often a lot of my clients are, you know, have families or married, whatever, and they're probably not always the primary cook. Most often they're not. So it's just like, okay, like, and it's they're the client, not their wife, right? It's like, okay, well, what if you just make some small tweaks? Like, see if your wife is open to cooking with coconut oil instead of the canola. Okay, and then just slowly build on little things, and it's like, well, okay, your wife made whatever, potatoes, and there's like, well, have a little bit more salad, or have a little bit more of the broccoli, and just take a little bit less potatoes, or whatever the thing may be, or do you really need a dinner roll? Just make some little tweaks, and then over time, they're like, yeah, I don't need that, I don't need that, and then not always, but sometimes it's a trickle effect, right? Like, yeah, I find that even my family, my extended family, right? It's like, nobody has the extreme as me, the people that we hang out with a lot, but over time they've all made small tiny little changes that have, and it's not, no one's perfect, but those little changes are helping them in the long term, right?
Oh, yeah, totally agree. When I'm working with other people, Mondays at the farm and garden store I'm at, what you do definitely other people notice and are curious about, like you said. So the one thing that, well, it's a couple of things, but mirroring what you just said with small changes, I will still eat the food, like if the company is paying for lunch and it's like tamales or fajitas or sushi, like you mentioned earlier, I'll still eat it and just pick out the thing that I know will kill me. So like if it's a burger, I won't eat the bread. If it's tamales, I just won't eat the wrapping. And people are just like, do you think that really makes a difference? And I'm like, oh yeah. And then I'll see them do it like 2 weeks later and they're like, oh, I don't have the lethargy, like the post-meal slump. And I was like, right, there are some things that contribute more to that than other. And very interesting, just little changes in diet.
I mean, I've been in I've gone to like presentations for business opportunities, what have you, it doesn't really matter, where it's a catered lunch or something. It's like usually simple sandwiches and a little veggie or a fruit plate and then chips or something like that. I was like, okay, well, I'll just take the fruit or the veggies, grab my sandwich, and I'll either just eat the meat, or if it's like pretty minimum, like there's like one slice of meat in there, and I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll toss the top bread and eat half the bread, because I need some substance. Like, I'm going to
Hours,
sit
yeah.
here for this presentation for an hour, I better get something in my stomach. So yeah, you just and I don't, who cares, right? Nobody really cares. If anything, they're more like, they're not judging, like, why is he, they're like, why is he do, ooh, that is that something I could do, like, so
Especially
everyone's
if you're the
curious.
presenter, right? Then there's
Yeah,
questions.
that's true, that's true.
All right. I have another burning question. So you have a probably, like you said, a lot of clients, corporate world, busy. Not a ton of free time. Probably most of their free time goes to family time if they're not working. I'm just making assumptions. But what's the low-hanging fruit you really like to go after that puts up or that most people have little resistance to incorporating? What's the like real easy stuff that you're like, okay, just start with these because there's usually not a ton of barrier.
From a nutrition point of view, or like
Yeah, or
overall?
nutrition, lifestyle, whatever you find usually works for most people that is easily incorporated. Yeah, a little bit of
Yeah,
everything.
so my, not to, if, well, we can if we want like a deep dive into my program or whatever, but like I take a very holistic approach of people's entire lives. Nutrition is just one aspect of that. So from a nutrition point of view, it's typically, again, it depends what people's goals are. So it's hard to one size fits all. But just thinking of maybe the last few clients, and you're pretty bang on with like busy, executives, any free time they do have, they want to spend with their family, et cetera, et cetera. So you're pretty bang on with that. Again, it's just making those small changes. It's like, if Friday night's three glasses of wine, like maybe two. Or if you're gonna do it, are you having like a biodynamic organic wine? I know you can afford it, so don't give me
That's a good
that.
point.
Like if you're gonna do it right. If you're gonna have, instead of having that beer, can you switch to like a vodka on the rocks or something like that? Like those things, the coconut oil. If you're gonna, and it's sometimes like these, some of these people work with, like they eat a lot out for their work, like they're entertaining clients or there's business functions. So I'm just like, okay, like what's the best choice you can make? Like order the steak, get a side of vegetables, don't get the potato. Like you're not, like asking for substitutions is not weird anymore, right? Like people get that, even in the business setting. Even I have clients who like do a lot of traveling. It's like, well, look ahead of time. Is there a place nearby? Is there a little grocery store around the corner you can pick up some eggs or whatever, type of thing. So just from a nutrition point, those like minor things. I won't go through. I'll just give one more example here. But what I also find, a lot of my clients Probably 50-50. Again, that same sort of demographic. They're all, you know, they're A-type personality, and sometimes that translate into, you know, they still want to be crushing their physical goals, right? Still want to run that, you know, triathlon. I still want to climb that mountain, like literally climb mountains,
yeah, right?
You know, et cetera, right? And it's just like, you kind of get a sense of the plan, like, dude, when do you rest? When do you do recovery? Well, I take Sundays off. I'm like, well, what does that look like? Well, I just don't do anything. Well, that's not recovery, right? Like, I'm talking active recovery. So I find a lot of, and not all my clients are like that, but the ones that are that A type and that are, you know, they could be in from late 30s to still, you know, even in their 60s, even they're still like doing those physical goals. It's like, you need to recover. We need to dial it back, your exercise. And that trade-off of time is you need to do active recovery. Well, I don't know, what's foam rolling? What's massage? What's blah, 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 you know, type of thing. So that's another thing that's actually really, I find, like, low hanging fruit is like, dial it back a bit and let's add some of this in. Like, you'll feel actually a lot better. You'll actually perform better.
You know? I love that. Yeah, that's my issue. I've had that issue forever because my metabolism usually just gives me boundless energy, but not really. It's kind of an illusion. Like, I'll be, if I use all of that, I'll just crash. So my problem has been with incorporating enough recovery time, because usually I, especially when I was trying to put on weight coming out of farming, and I was just doing bodybuilding style and just tired all the time. I don't think people understand, and it took me a while to get that exercise is inflammation. Like, unless you're just walking, which is perfect, but like anything where, like you said earlier, chronic, so that black hole zone of training where you're no longer going light enough to be taking enough oxygen, you're just sucking air. What most people think of getting a workout in is taxing and creating a lot of oxidative damage, which you need to recover from. So I think that's a mindset barrier for a lot of people, myself included, although I've gotten better at it. Have you found any tricks to give to people other than showing them the data as to sort of what's happening metabolically and how much more they can perform if they do take enough recovery time? Have you found any good way to sort of get people to dial it back or to show them the difference?
Yeah. So one thing I do this personally. I mean, if people are going to do what they're going to do, and it depends on their lifestyle, what they have time for. Some executive, well, doesn't matter what, he'll make the time to do 3 days a week, 2 hours in the gym. He just likes that. Another guy's like struggling. I want to go to the gym. How do I get in there? So everyone teach their own and what they can fit in and what their goals are. Obviously, I'm really, you know, even when it comes to strength training, I really like HIIT strength training. Yeah. Boom, in, done, fast, still going to get all the benefits. Again, depending on their goals, what they're trying to do. But just, it's really just to show them, like, just try this, see how it goes. And it could be, you know, as an example, it's like, okay, instead of, you know, going to wherever, to the big box gym or whatever, and doing your regular routine, how about this? Why don't you just try some, you know, body weight squats? Oh, that's too easy. That's too light. Blah, blah, blah. I put 300 pounds on my back. Okay. Got it. Well, do you have some 50-pound dumbbells? Yeah, I got that. Okay. Do some 50-pound dumbbells, body weight squats, and throw blood flow restriction bands on. And tell me you're not dead afterwards, you know, and you did it in a third of the time. Now this time you have, you can actually stretch after. You can actually stretch after you did your, because a lot of these guys, like, I got my time in, shower, suit back on or whatever, back to the office or rush home because I got to help go to the kids' soccer game, whatever. There's no time for recovery, active recovery. And I was like, no, you have to make time. And I, from experience, not everyone has back issues, although some people come to me because they know my backstory.
Oh, sure.
And they want that. But take it from me, doesn't matter how old you are, you want to protect your spine. So again, I show them some, if they're interested, show my whole routine. Not that it's the best be all end all, but protect your spine, keep your core strong. Again, for me, that's knee to shoulders, so that you can have long, even things you don't worry about now. We're talking that we're playing the long game here, right? Like, what do you want to be able to do 20, 30, 40 years from now? Let's start working it now. And that includes not only strength, but recovering properly, stretching, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that. Right. Stability and mobility, core strength, are kind of the foundation of all movement. And that's the thing you notice first if anything goes wrong, thing that you appreciate most when you get older. So that's usually you lose your mobility first whenever you start getting older. And that's where people notice the, it's kind of a, leads into depression because you can't do like your vehicle that you're operating isn't functioning and you can't make it. So no amount of willpower or visualization will necessarily get that back without invasive surgery. So it's always worthwhile to do that now. Even when I was in my early 20s, or this happens a lot when you're a kid, it's like, yeah, that's cute, the stretching and mobility stuff. It's like, I need performance. And you're like, it will only take one injury to knock you out for weeks or months for you to take this seriously. You don't want that to happen. So you'll tear something, or something will happen to your lumbar spine, something like a, yeah, anything in your hips, shoulder impingement, knees. Like, your body's pretty adaptable, except when you do repetitive damage all the time. And it only takes one of those focal points to just lay you out for months, and then you'll take it seriously. So the goal is to obviously do the work so you never really have to experience that. Oh, that's why they're telling me to do that. Take it from everyone who's been laid out for a while.
Yeah, when I don't know if you do this with your clients, I'll do this with mine from the movement point of view. Again, I take a very broad spectrum approach to their health, but you know, somebody's like A type, again, sort of the stereotypical person, and I can do this and that and bench and whatever and blah blah blah. And it's like, okay, I'll do functional movement tests with them. It's like, and they can't even do sits to stand. It's like, okay, your core is weak. Like, you're wasting your time.
Right.
You can't even do this. You know, it's like, how are you going to, you know, do you have kids? Yeah, I got young kids. Do you play on the floor? Yeah, no problem. Yeah, but you need to use like a knee and a hand to get up.
Right.
What about 30 years from now when you have grandkids? Would you like to play with them? Yeah, of course. You know, it's like, what do you think you're going to look like then if you can't do this now? Oh, like, you know, it's kind of thing, you know, and yeah, there are obviously other tests as well, right? So, but it's very simple, like very, people have to be actually be pretty, I don't want to say fit, but they have to have decent core strength to be able to sit to stand properly, right?
It and has to be trained. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people can't do it. Many people can't do it. So it's like, okay, why are you wasting your stuff with this? I don't care if you can do 500 pounds under the squat rack. If you can't do that, like, unless that's your goal, unless that you're a professional, whatever, like that's a different story. I'm talking about the average people, yep, right? I don't work with elite athletes. So I work with average Joe and Jane.
Yeah, same. I will have people do hangs, which is so depressing when you can't hang for 45 seconds just with your own body weight, or any sort of movement compensation, like you said. So the body is extremely good at getting the job done, and it will mobilize whatever it needs to and compensate wherever it needs to just get you out of danger. I mean, that's the purpose of that, is so you don't die. So like you said, you can, your body will move the weight, but probably not correctly and not using the correct core strength, correct form. So if you start those real basic exercises, like a single leg squat that require almost no real strength, like if we're doing powerlifting type strength, but a whole bunch of stability, and it's so humbling. And that's usually a good barometer, like you said, just like either unilateral exercise, and you're like, you're not moving any weight. You're literally just keeping yourself in your center of gravity. And that's a lot of good advice for a good way to test your core. Do anything on one side, or don't use any support. Don't sit on something. Make yourself balance. It takes a lot more energy too, so people get winded so quickly.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought a balance, because that's something I always work in with people, regardless of age, but especially if they're, you know, in their 50s, 60s. It's like, you got to do balance work. If you're not doing balance work, what are you, like, you're potentially setting yourself up for disaster. So you have to do balance work. It actually surprises me. Not to throw, you know, the running community under the bus, but how many don't do strength training? And if they do, they don't do single leg. When are you ever running on two legs? Never. Do single leg, you know, strength training. So anyway, that's it.
And single leg all or unilateral single side, anything reveals usually drastic imbalances. So one side is always so much stronger, and you're like, I have almost no strength on your, and sometimes it's the opposite of your dominant side. So like my left arm actually has way better performance than my right arm, and that might just be because it's not always chronically fatigued. Same with my left side of my left legs are actually way stronger, but you don't know what your body's doing until you test parts of it, because it'll make it
Absolutely.
happen. And then hopefully you can avoid doing any surgery in the future. Like you said, a balance. Usually at like the classic story is someone falls and breaks their hip, and that cascades into a nightmare scenario of something when they're in their 70s or 80s. It's always something with
No,
balance.
number one cause of death for people over 65 is falls.
Yes, right. It's always worthwhile to have when off center gravity, stability, and being able to like reach for something. And like you said, in your how you messed up your lower back, it was you were chronically training, and you went to pick up a very lightweight, probably didn't have perfect form when you did it, and it doesn't take much when
No,
you're that inflamed.
So my knees, quads, super inflamed from the chronic running, so totally bent over at the back. I was actually picking up like a 5 pound dumbbell. That's what did it.
Doesn't take much.
No.
Yeah, big lesson. So anyone listening, take it from us. It does, the weight doesn't matter. You're just like, oh, I'll be able to do yard work, or I just made a video on yard work because of the I was doing some storm cleanup, and mostly for myself, I was like, make sure you treat this like a workout. It's usually not if the gym people get injured, because you're conscious of your form, hopefully, or you do a proper warm up, you do a little core, so your body's kind of primed and holding yourself. It's when you're golfing, it's when you're doing picking up large limbs, and you just don't pay attention. You didn't do the proper warm up. You're twisting, and it's some weird angle or twisting that people will feel something tear when you're not in.
Yeah, and for those of us who live in more northern climates, snow shoveling, right? You got to warm up and you got to have good form. Otherwise, you're just asking for disaster.
People have heart attacks all the time. I'm from New Hampshire, and that was one of the things. Is like, if you just change the temperature drastically, do nothing to prepare yourself, you're not active, so your heart's not going to be used to that dramatic shift in blood pressure and everything, and then you just are rounding your back and twisting. Whole bunch of things could go wrong. Right. Heard. Yeah.
I wanted to explain my newest coaching offering, what I think the community and everyone who I talk to is actually asking for and really needs. What I'm seeing is most people have one habit, one healthy habit that they've always been trying to implement, either going to bed on time, having better sleep hygiene, consistently meal prepping, setting themselves up for nutritional success, whatever that means to you for the next week, having a sustainable growth-based exercise routine to help you get back in your body, having a more creative reflection time, getting out into nature more, any of these things, all pieces fit together. What I'm seeing is most people have tried that one thing they know would make them a better version of themselves. And they probably had success for a couple days, a couple weeks, and then something happens in life and they revert back to old routines simply because it's easier, more convenient, and they don't have to put the willpower into it. So what I am offering is basically habit coaching. It's a month, 30 days of daily habit coaching. What I do is help you find exactly what works for your context in your life, fits your lifestyle, work habits, sleep habits, all of that. Dig in and find the really nitty-gritty, granular things. Takes a lot of knowing yourself, but it's always worth the time. If you have that one little habit that you've been trying to nail down that will make a massive change in your life, whatever you define that is, reach out. I'd be happy to chat about it. The discovery call, the strategy call is always free.
Good advice. What do you find ends up being, I'm assuming there's a lot of mindset or maybe visualization in your coaching. Any of that that you utilize at the start just to give people a good amount
Yeah,
of.
so what I typically do is, again, I don't really care what people's diet is or what they identify as. I'm this, I'm that, whatever. I don't care. We can optimize it though. And we'll use genetic testing and stuff as well. And I've certainly done a lot of that as well. But what I typically ask, I'm not a macros guy, I'm not a counting calories guy or nothing. No, I actually think that's kind of useless. But what I do ask my clients to do is just do a minimum, a 2-week log. I just want to get a baseline of what a typical period looks like so I can find where are the small things we can tweak, where are the easy wins. So while they're doing that, I mean, mindset is so important. It's like probably the number one thing that is going to carry out throughout the entire engagement with somebody. But specifically front loaded those first couple weeks while they're just, we're not even going to talk about nutrition until I see that log. We're not going to talk about water. We're not going to talk about supplements, blah, blah, blah. We're not going to talk about exercise, nothing. Those first couple weeks, we're going to work about mindset, all facets. And you know, we're going to really dig into their backstory. I had a client in the past where, you know, they were on some medications and okay, great. So we talked about that because of, you know, anxiety. So how did that come about? And it's some addictive stuff in their past. You dig into it and you boil it down to like, you know, some issues with their parents when they were growing up that led to this cascade of stuff to where they're at now. So, okay, mindset, you know, it's like, well, have you ever talked about your parents? Well, no. And you know, that took some coaxing because that's not an easy conversation, but you know, eventually they had some difficult conversations with their parents. And at the end of the day, I was like, he was better for it. Their relationship was stronger for it. And that's all stuff that the seed was planted in the first couple of weeks. It took a long time to get to that point and coming back to it and coming back to it. But yeah, so mindset and motivation is kind of what I call it, is super important. I mean, to a degree, I try and get that before I even start working with somebody. I want to work with somebody who's committed, who's you know, going to be engaged in the process. So you know, some of that's the pre-screening as well. But once they come on board, then we're like, okay, now we're really going to dig into it because it's super important. Like nothing happens downstream, to use that terminology, if it's not already working on up here. So
yeah, it has to be in the internal landscape before it's even remotely reflected externally. I completely agree. You have to start the change in the mind first and then the body follows. There's ways to reverse that too, but for the vast majority of people, mindset it changes your perspective. It changes the way you filter things. So it changes what you actually see in the world. So you can change your filtration mechanisms to see more healthy food or barriers, different ways that lead you to success, right? So it's a good way to utilize all of that unused brain power to actually filter the world in your favor, as I usually like to.
Yeah. So I work with people for a year. My program is a year long with them. So wow. we have time.
Right? Yeah, you got time.
Right. But also at the same time, I want people who, one, not only committed to the program, but also committed to like that long-term goal. They're playing the long game with their health. So people are like, you know, hey, I have a girlfriend's wedding in 4 months. Can you help me? Like, yeah, I can, but I don't want to work with you. Like, you know, I'm obviously more polite than that, but that's not what I do. I want to work with people who have that long-term vision, who want, you know, even after the year's done, they're in a solid position where like, yeah, I'm good for the next 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. Cause they understand, they might not at the beginning, they might just like, okay, it's a year and I want to get to here, but somewhere along that way, I haven't had a client yet who, when they've come to graduate, is like, I look at XYZ differently now. I look at the long-term view and it could be their grandkids that they don't even have yet. It could be, you know, appreciation for their body and things they could do. I used to hike and then life happened and I can never hike now. It's like, I'm back to hiking.
Right.
You know, that type of thing. So
it changes the bar. It changes your perception of your possibilities. Yeah. I love that. That's crucial to what I do as well, as I don't purposely make them think that far down the line, but the goal is, and I think this is what makes health coaching a little different than most other coaching, is most of the programs I know from other health coaches are designed so that when they leave your care, they shouldn't need to come back. I mean, obviously people are going to some degree, but it's right. Set them up so that they have the tools, just add more tools to your toolbox so that even if you don't know exactly, remember what we said, you know where to look, or you know what resources you need to find to get there yourself rather than having to rely on an external authority.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also like that you said planted seeds a couple of minutes ago. as far as mindset, I always think of that literally, because that's part of my thing is encouraging people to start growing vegetables for themselves, do microgreens, do garden stuff. So there's always a metaphor. That's partially why I encourage people to start growing, is because there's always a mirror reflection to yourself. So as you keep growing, the plants will mirror needs, lessons back to you. So it's the exact same thing as you growing internally, is mistakes you learn, or mistakes, lessons you learn. They're kind of a quick growing way of trial and error, and the same concepts apply. So it's a cool dichotomy.
Yeah. I'll take a little twist on that one. And I'm sure you're familiar with like the bamboo, how the bamboo grows, yeah. Right? So it's like all this work, where's the progress? Don't worry. We're building on something. Then all of a sudden that shoot comes up and then boom,
skyrockets.
Massive gain, right? Massive transformation, whatever that is for that person, yeah. Really quickly when you thought, geez, nothing's happening here. Yeah. So
I think James Clear had that too in Atomic Habits. It was mathematically, if you get 1% better every day, there's nothing. And then you hit a compound and it exponentially skyrockets. Yeah. So that's what people see. It's you don't notice the incremental progress until you stacked enough of them. And then you start getting sort of compound interest hitting, and you start doing the 3%, 5%, 10%, like it just grows quickly. So it's put in the initial grind, the grudging, which is where kind of the discipline and the habits are building. And then like after, usually it's a month in or a month and a half for my programs, people are like, oh, okay. That's when the metabolism really starts changing and things get a little easier. And then they start focusing on other things and bigger things. I had one guy who just needed to be able to get a workout in because he traveled a lot, couldn't get into the gym ever. We tried to do that for a while and it never worked. So resistance bands and body weight challenges finally stuck. And then once he got that under his belt, then he started thinking about trail running. And right, so it's a growth curve. Once you hit that self, the internal motivation and the discipline, and you are confident in yourself and you're like, oh, let's see how far I can take this. Still within reason. Like, I don't know that I'm going to encourage him to do a marathon, like you said, just because chronic damage, but something where you can get outside, and like trail running, in my opinion, is just a good one, especially if you can keep it minimized, low impact, and just enjoying nature and things like that. So many benefits, but that's why I love seeing people just stick with it. And then they notice that the possibilities sort of open up once they get one thing down, and then it just takes off. Yeah. I love seeing that in people.
Yeah, me too. So powerful when they see that, they recognize that transformation in themselves.
Yep. Yeah. And then our role becomes less so, and we just get to watch and cheer, and it's amazing. Yeah. So you work primarily with long-term, is your focus on metabolism or everything, just lifestyle in general? So you said long game.
Yeah. So if I had to put a label on it,
yeah,
I would say it's probably like anti-aging longevity.
That's a good one. If any goal, that's a good goal.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously,
I'm a centenarian.
I do want to become a, that is a stated, publicly stated goal for sure. So, yeah, I'm realistic in the fact that I know how much damage I probably did to myself in my teens and 20s and even my mid 30s before things turned around for me. That I'm like, man, 130, 140, that might be pushing it, because I probably do have a lot of damage, even with new tech and all that. So I'm like, no, 100, 110, I'm good with that. If I can see my great, great grandkids, I'm good with that, and be able to pick them up and still have, you know, functionality and all that. So that's probably the if I had to put a label on my program. But again, we touch on like, I kind of have seven buckets, and there's obviously multiple topics in each one. Nutrition, or, you know, I call it glycemic variability. Movement is another one, which, you know, includes both strength training and sort of cardio. Mindset, motivation, we talked about a minute ago, et cetera, et cetera. Even then to, you know, the last one, and they all interweave. It's not like if you do this, then you do this. It's just whatever the client needs that day and what their goals are, et cetera. But then there's also the to use an over overused term, the biohacking, the fringe, the science, the cutting edge, whether that be stem cells, et cetera, you know, that can be weaved in as well if they're ready for it. Right?
I think that's probably the most exciting field to watch because there's so much money and research being done in anti-aging. And it, well, I should say longevity. Anti-aging has been the word forever, but the amount of epigenetic research that's being done, the amount of research on telomeres and their role, the amount of medicinal herbs that are now being discovered to touch telomeres, like Jiaogulong, I just noticed. I follow a couple of channels that make specific formulations of ginseng and Jiaogulong, which have been used for millennia in Chinese medicine, but now have the studies on them. They're like, oh, these will actually prevent telomere shortening. So a couple of those like drastic, really easy to do things that were give you a little more longevity, as well as autophagy and just the cellular cleanup and cooling your metabolism down a little more. Fasting is probably the low-hanging fruit for most people, and a lot of large promises have been made in the media about fasting, and you're like, don't even pay attention to all that. It's just that it's what it allows your body to do. Like, you don't necessarily need to, it's how to make it sustainable for people. So you're like, you don't need to do 3 to 5 day fasts all the time. That's pretty stressful too. Just incorporate it like you do into your everyday life and enjoy the benefits.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's a nice segue. So it hasn't been really, I don't know when this podcast will be released from when we're recording.
Soon.
So probably my article might be out after or right about the same time, but I actually did just the May long weekend. I did, my family was away, so I was home by myself. So all those temptations, my daughter wanting pizza, except all that was all eliminated. So I actually did a 4 day fast just to try it. I never done before. You know, I quite often just by accident is like, oh, it's been 23 hours since I ate. I'll just go another hour, like whatever. Like I've done that a few times, right? Where it's just, you're just busy. So, but I was purposefully doing it. So I have a series of a small posts that are going to be coming out about my experience and what I actually realized from it. And it's not going to be, oh, I lost weight. What most people, like you said, the media, what they kind of paintbrush, it's going to be a little bit more interesting. So yeah, if I could just, I'll just tease that. If anyone's,
whoever's
watching this, check out my website for those series of blog posts on my fasting, my 4 day fasting experience. So
send me those whenever you do publish them. And I will, even if this is up, I'll just edit the show notes and tag them in there. Yeah. I'm curious what you notice, because it's always interesting. If you're a lot of the stories we get from people who do keto or metabolic change or fasting are if they go from standard American diet to the extreme. So if you go from eating pizza, mac and cheese, whatever, to a 3 day fast. And it's just like, that's not the easiest way to do it. It's always a different story if you've built that metabolic flexibility, built the metabolic machinery, if you played with IF before. Like you said, it's kind of seamless into the beginning of it. And then it's just, okay, let's see what the rest of this feels like. So it's a completely different ballgame if you've done the initial training, nutritional and movement-based training, so that your body doesn't go into shock whenever it happens. I'm curious what you detail.
Yeah, I'll just share this one thing. So again, I've done 24, 25 hours a few times. My regular routine is 16 to 18, you know, somewhere like that. So that's no big deal. And I've been doing that for years, probably 5 years or something like that. So going 2 full days was like a breeze.
Right.
Like I didn't really even notice anything till sort of day 3. So I'll just leave it at that. And
okay.
Leave that as a cliffhanger for people to actually read the article. So yeah.
Okay, I think we covered most of the things I wanted to. Was there any other glaring topic that you wanted to chat about?
No, I don't think so. And I'll just, you know, I'm sure people are well aware, you know, I hope they are. And I'm sure you've talked about it before. It's just like, there's no one size fits all for anyone, whether it's movement, whether it's nutrition, sleep, even for that matter. It's very individualized. So not to talk about my program, but again, it's very highly individualized, highly curated to the individual. And again, that takes into account data, you know, like my clients need to get genetic testing. They need to get an Oura ring. And, you know, we'll see what, because what works for them is not what works for their wife or their
kids.
I
might have you back to talk about heart rate variability, a couple of things we didn't touch on, sleep, stress mitigation. I know there's a ton of that, I'm sure, with type A individuals or just busy executives. So we might do a part two with diving into this, more of the nitty gritty.
Well, let me, I'd love to do a part two. So let me tease this for part two. So a lot of these folks, again, what they see in them, I mean, obviously some people, they realize, okay, I'm carrying too much extra weight or whatever. They think that's their problem. That's a symptom, in my opinion, of a bigger problem, but okay. But actually a lot of them actually recognize, like, I have anxiety, I can't sleep, I wake up at 4 a.m. thinking about that meeting I have coming up or a project I need to do, et cetera, et cetera. That's what they think they want and what they come to me for often. But again, great, we can handle that. And they don't even realize you're going to get all the other 7 buckets at the same time working with me. And we'll definitely handle your stress, your anxiety, et cetera. Oh, by the way, we're going to bring your inflammation down through nutrition, through blah, 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 right? So
that's why I swapped into health coaching I started as a personal trainer, just because that's kind of the easier, more targeted, you know, like, I'm going to help people. This is probably the most effective way. And then you quickly realize that it doesn't make as much of an impact or a lasting metabolic change. There's no lifestyle shift. There's no mindset shift. There's no nutrition. You're missing too many other pieces. So you'll definitely put on a little muscle and you'll see a little change, but I just swapped to exactly like you said, the full package, because that's the only place people see lasting change, and it gives them all of the tools they need so that they don't have to come back for, I mean, people might come back for just a new workout routine or something just to spice it up, but just so it's not a constantly needing a coach because you're missing sleep part, you're missing the how to deal with traveling part, all of that, like you said, it needs to be all inclusive or there's no real lasting change.
Yeah. And I don't know if you know before, this about me, but I'll share. Yeah. So before I was already, like I mentioned earlier at the beginning of our conversation, I was already getting into the research about performance from a running perspective, that when I injured myself, and now the research changed to how to heal my back. And then I just got into everything, performance, everything, optimization, everything. So when I made the decision, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do a career change, just like you, I started with, like, okay, I think personal training is the quickest thing I can do. But I already knew it was going to be more. I was probably going to be focused on nutrition, because that was the biggest driver for me. Yeah. For my change was bringing inflammation down through nutrition. When I went to do my course, I was fortunate enough that the person teaching my course had been in the industry a long time, had, you know, seen the ups and downs, all the negatives of the weight loss industry, the personal training industry, et cetera, you know, had a very realistic view. And they were very clear with us as students, is like, there's no one size fits all. There's no, you know, if you wanted this, you have to have so many grams per body weight protein, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're very open. So I was like, so that was good. It was a perfect person. And that was just random. Perfect person to teach me while I was doing that. But I knew it was nutrition. So even though I'm a certified personal trainer, I've never trained a person since I used to train people earlier and younger, would not even know anything, like, oh, this is what I read in the bodybuilding magazine and it worked for me or worked for my friend, so I'll help you, middle-aged lady, train or whatever. Like, I was totally, you know, just at the local gym or whatever, because somebody just asked me, type of thing. When I actually got properly certified, I've never actually trained one person, because that's not my interest. I mean, obviously movement, what I call movement, which is strength training, and is an important piece, but I don't do that in isolation. So it's kind of sort of similar in our
backstory. Yeah, if you want to actually make impact, it has to be full package, has to be a holistic approach, just because movement is a great facet, and resistance training is will give you a huge buffer and will incorporate a lot of those metabolic changes you're looking for. But if you don't change anything else around it, the inflammation is still a pain in the butt to deal with, and it's going to be a major factor and hindrance for growing at all. Just, you can put on muscle under it, but other than that, you still might be just whole bunch of damage happening, like you experienced. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. What is the if people wanted to look at your post when it comes out and just look at your approach to things, what is your sort of the thing you pay attention to social media wise most? Like, where would people follow you?
Yeah, so I mean, certainly people can come to my website. Mm-hmm. I have two. So I have Deepak Saini health.com. Mm-hmm. It's kind of my overarching one. And then my program that I mentioned, alluded to a few times, is Personal Blue Zones with S at the end. Mm-hmm. .com, again, Blue Zones, you know, longevity, et cetera. Yeah. I'm probably the most active on, just coming from my corporate background. You know, I built quite a following on LinkedIn. So that's probably a good place to follow me. I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter too. So everything gets pretty much everywhere, but probably the most engaging, or where I communicate most with people, is probably LinkedIn, actually. So
okay, good to know. I'll put all of that in the show notes, and if anyone is interested in your approach, they will hopefully go watch. And longevity is a huge thing, trendy even now. So I mean, it shouldn't be trendy because it doesn't really go away, but that's probably of massive importance and interest to a lot of people.
You know what I find, I don't want to take up too much time here, but I find, for, you know, people like us who are close to or in this industry and do research and, you know, are part of this, yeah, we see it a lot. Longevity seems trendy, but when I go out to the everyday person, they don't know about longevity. No one's thinking that, you know. So yes, it's growing. Absolutely. I totally believe it, but I think it's still with a small subset of population. That's just my take.
No, you're right. I get a wake up call whenever, because even whenever you're trying to become a health coach, you're just like, you're in that world and you're like, everyone's a health coach. This is a saturated market. How am I ever going to, and then you go into the real world and you're like, right, nope, that's my bubble. No one knows any of this. I mean, people do, but right, or the places you'll shop are usually more in line with your diet. And those are the places that are more likely to cater to that crowd, but that's still 1 to 5% of the population. So, right. It's always get out of your bubble and right. There are plenty of people interested and they'll follow your specific interest in it. And you are clearly passionate and enthusiastic about it. So that, I'm sure, will come through all of your work.
I don't want to get this podcast taken down or banned, but just go to a Walmart or a McDonald's and tell me people are thinking about longevity. That's
right. I'm on every platform. There's no way they could ban it. Don't worry. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we do need to do part two. We'll talk about some of the more niche topics, heart rate variability, sleep optimization, all of those, sort of biohacking and metric tracking things that are always very fascinating.
I'm looking forward to it. That'd be awesome.
Thanks so much for your time, Deepak.
No, I appreciate it. Gratitudes for having me on.
Have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Bye.